We're taking up the story, which is brought down in the Talmud, of Nacham Ish Gamzu. Gamzu is short for Gamzu Latova. This too is for the good. We're reading a translation from the Ein Yaakov. Because whatever happened to him, he would say, Gamzu Latova, which is loosely translated, it's all for the best. Literally, this too is for the good. Here's the story. Once the Jews wanted to send a gift to the Roman emperor, and Nachum was chosen to go to deliver it to the emperor, to the palace. Now the term in the Gemara is that he was malumad benisim. The translation over here is that he had experienced many miracles, which is okay, but it malumad was learned, so to speak, familiar. Perhaps you want to call him a man of miracles. Loose translation. Bear in mind also that it's a serious situation because the entire reason wasn't just a matter of sending a gift. It was a very significant political gesture intended to pacify the emperor. The Jews were living under the clutches of the Roman Empire at the time. And this was a significant... The Gemara is not going into all the particularities because it's not interested in the history, but you have to bear in mind that it's a very significant situation. In order to achieve a certain type of security relationship with the emperor. That's why they chose him. And that's why it's mentioning, because he was someone, so to speak, who could pull off miracles. So they didn't just entrust it to anybody. They sent him with a bag full of precious gems and pearls. Okay, so that's the bribe. On the way, he spent the night in an inn. And during the night, the people stole the jewels and replaced them with earth. So you see a calamity in the making. Not just that the jewels were stolen. Had the jewels just been stolen, it would have been, that's enough for anyone. That would have been a setback, but that would have been basically a loss in terms of money, a fortune of money. Obviously, it had to be worth fortune, a tremendous fortune. And that itself, for most people, would have been a terrible calamity. But it wouldn't be the stuff of the story, because then no damage would have come to them. They would have gone back. They would start over again. Would have been just a monetary loss. But here they're proceeding now with these satchels, which are filled with earth, because they camouflaged it, thinking that they're going to present this beautiful gift. So you can see what a tremendous calamity is in the making. When Nachum arrived at the palace, they untied his bag and found that it was full of earth. The emperor was furious and wanted to kill the Jews for mocking him. Nachum merely said, Gamzu Latova, it's all for the best. Obviously, it's not enough to just say it's all for the best. They're in a calamity. This is the worst calamity. That instead of it achieving its purpose, instead of a gift, it turns out that they're caught in a situation where they're trying to mock him. It's the worst calamity that they could imagine, not just for themselves, but for the defense of Israel, the Jewish people. But let's see. So how does it work out, Latov? For the good. The prophet Elijah then appeared in the guise of a Roman senator. One of them, in other words. He appears, and he appears in the guise of one of their own people. And remarked, perhaps this is some of the earth of their father Abraham. For when he threw earth against the armies of the four kings. Now you all remember the story of the four kings who had conquered the coalition of the five kings and had stolen his nephew Lot. We've gone through that story. And Abraham, with 318 men, he armed them and he led them on a midnight raid, a commando raid, and was extremely successful. We analyzed it in detail at one point. And saved Lot and all the people of Sodom and all the wealth and so on. So now, this is what happened. Elijah made an appearance. For when he threw earth against the armies of the four kings, it turned into swords. And when he threw straw, it turned into arrows. And he quotes a pasuk from Yeshaya. It's a very fascinating thing. Elijah comes back. He's now in the guise of a Roman senator. And he's making up the story about the earth, that the earth really has these special powers. And as you know, he's quoting from the verse in Isaiah, Yeshaya. He was a senator who was learned, apparently, who made his enemies like dust before his sword, like straw blown about before his bow. So, he's quoting a pasuk that confirms this idea, that this earth has special powers, and it's the dirt that comes from Avram, that Avram Avinu used it and was successful in this tremendous battle, because all the odds were stacked against him. And as a result of this earth, he was successful. Now, there was one nation the emperor previously had been unable to subdue. But when they tried some of this earth against it, they were able to conquer it. So apparently, they didn't think that this was crazy. And at the same time, they didn't just accept it either. So they decided to use it against one nation that was very resistant, and they couldn't conquer them, and they used it, and they were successful. So what happened? They took Nahum to the imperial treasury and filled his bag with precious stones and pearls and sent him on his way with great honor. All right, so at this point we can pause. The story doesn't end, interestingly enough. It should really end at this point. But here you see, Gamzul is over. Because not only does it work out for the good, but the good that it works out is even greater than what they had anticipated. You see that? That it's even greater than they had anticipated. Because not only does it serve its purpose in the end, but they walk away with this tremendous honor, which, had it not happened, had they come there with the money itself, we don't know whether it would have succeeded or not, whether the mission would have succeeded or not. That's one thing. Because they weren't sure. They were hoping. Obviously, they weren't sure, because it says they picked Nachum Ish Gamzu, that someone who could do miracles. So obviously, they recognized that, not because they anticipated this was going to happen. How can anybody anticipate this? But they recognized that in the ordinary course of things, it's going to require someone with tremendous skill. So they were hoping that it would just be successful and they'd accept the bribe and they'd gain some security. They'd gain favor. What happened as a result was much, much better. Not only did they achieve that, but they got the money back, perhaps more, because they rewarded him with tremendous treasure and honor. So they looked up to them. They had a tremendous respect that they otherwise would not have had. It's Gamzu Latova. On his return trip, he spent the night in the same inn. And they asked him, we're getting back to the story now, so on the way back, they stop off at the same inn. And they asked him, what gift did you bring to the emperor that they showed you such honor? Question is being raised, why would they go back to the same inn? Especially people that are so brilliant and able to work out of situations. On the aside, it's not really a problem in and of itself, because it's not even clear. A lot of these stories that are recorded in the Talmud, it's possible that they're metaphors, that they possibly actually happened. It's possible that it's a story, which is meant to reflect something. And when you want to reflect something, so you tell it in a certain kind of a way. Obviously, it can't be interpreted literally, as we will soon see. Now, it's also possible that it did happen, and something very, very significant happened, which reflects this particular quality of Gamzu, and they chose to tell it this way. So really, I'm not concerned with the particulars why he stopped at that inn, but even so, even if you want to take the story seriously, it could be that there was no other place to stop, and it's a homeless situation. Bear in mind that it's different now, that coming back with all that money, it's going to create a whole different dynamics. The whole dynamics has changed. So even if you assume that it actually happened, nothing wrong with them going back to the same inn. So they asked, what gift did you bring to the emperor that they showed you such honor? He replied, well, I guess he thought that they probably discovered the dirt, and then they substituted something else for it. He replied, I brought what I had taken from here. The innkeepers thereupon tore down the inn and took the earth to the emperor. They now wanted to cash in. See, well, they were very greedy. Greedy, because they had stolen all that money. And nothing, there was no confrontation over the stolen jewelry. It didn't confront them. Why should he? There's no point to it. But they wanted more. So they said, they filled up their satchels with all this earth. And they said to him, the earth that was brought to you belonged to us. They tested it. And when they found that it didn't work, they put the innkeepers to death. The question really one would ask is, what's the latter part have to do with the idea of Gamza L'Tova? Unless you want to say that that was a Tov, that was a good, that these people were punished in addition to that, but I don't think that, because you're talking about someone like Nachum Ish Gamza, you're talking about people on a very high level.
So why would he care?
So why would he care? Why would it be important to him that this happened to them? And the truth of the matter, well, eventually they found out about it, of course it's in the story. But it doesn't seem that in the story this is happening because it's going to be an additional bonus for Nachum Ish Gamza that his tormentors were put to death. I don't think so. The story should have ended at that part where they gave them honor. That was the good. What happened subsequent to that is a different issue. That the wicked people, how they act and so on, that's a separate story. What does it have to do with the first part of the story? First question is, does this story, as told, successfully illustrate the principle of Gamzu L'Tova? There is an inner tension, internal tension or contradiction in the story itself, seems to be. Because when you address the ordinary person and you're telling them about a philosophy of life to live by, this is how you should live. So you're saying basically in all the situations, or most of the situations that you confront, you should approach it from the standpoint of Gamzu L'Tova, that this is for the good. You shouldn't get worked up and upset and angry, or all the things that you think are so terrible. Now you can illustrate it for me with a certain type of a story. This doesn't do, because you're telling me that he's someone who's practiced in miracles, and the reason why he was confident and the way he got out of it was because of a miracle. So of course, if I have that kind of power, so then of course I'm not going to be concerned. Of course I'm going to be an optimist. It's like if you're Superman, so then you're not going to get worried about these types of things. If you're Superman and the plane, you're in a plane, and there's a lot of turbulence and concern and there's danger and you may come down, and then some people are being, no, relax, be optimistic. And then you find that this person is Superman, he can fly. So fine for you, it's not a big deal. But for the average person, that you can't use that. You can't use that as a story, that I was in an airplane, and everybody was nervous, and then it blew up midair, and I flew. Superman tells us I flew, and I landed, and everything was fine. So Gamzu L'Tova, that's not the story. What about the people that can't fly? What is the meaning that he was practiced or acquainted with miracles? If that's the case, so then it removes the whole virtue. So where's the virtue? So he's put into this impossible situation where everything seems hopeless for the average person. And he said, no problem. Well, if you can do miracles, if you can take any situation and just transform it magically, so what's the big deal? Then we'll all be totally confident. The second problem is, what is the meaning of Elijah? That Elijah appeared. This whole thing is very, very strange. What is the meaning that Elijah came and he appeared? And also, again, if you're going to assume some kind of a magical power, so what do you have to come with the story? If a magical power, he could have transformed the dirt. He could have said it's an accident and there's jewels elsewhere. He could have discovered jewels. I mean, there's many. The whole story sounds ridiculous. Well, you see, it's not just a miracle. It's Elijah appearing, and he appears as one of them. And he makes up a story. Now, the story, the way it works is, related to the very thing itself, the dirt. That whole thing, that, what's the sense behind it? You never would have thought of this in a million years. He's going to convince them that this dirt was the dirt of Abraham. What's the point of that? And this dirt has special powers. So really what he's trying to show them is that, to the contrary, they're not making fun out of you. They brought you something which is much, much more valuable than any kind of money. That sounds like a crazy approach to take. And the basis for this is the quote from Isaiah. Then it says that they tested it. What does that mean? So are we saying that it actually worked? Once you get into the realm of the so-called miracle, it's either you take it literally, and the miracle's happening all over the place, and then again, we can't analyze the story. Because if it happened, it happened. I mean, but you can't learn anything from that. But if it didn't, if it's a metaphor, so what's it a metaphor for? What's it trying to communicate to you? Everything here seems preposterous. Elijah turning into a Roman senator. His explanation about what the dirt really is. So what are they, stupid people? It's trying, sometimes you try and talk your way out of something. You get stopped by a cop. There's a limit to how far you can go. The story is so ridiculous, it's just an insult to his intelligence. You're going to get yourself into worse trouble. Then it says that they actually tested it. So what does that mean? That it actually worked? Another problem, it would seem, is that they sent Nachum Ish Gamzu because of his expertise. So what did he have to do with it? He, according to the story, all he did was say, this is also for the good, but then he doesn't do anything. Then Eliyahu does the work. So what do we mean? So where was his skills? I'm going to present Rabbi Chait's interpretation. It's on a tape. And of course, it's basically, I'm giving a review, and according to the way I understand it, and would apply it. So the crucial thing, let's take a look. The first thing, where do we see the first evidence of the virtue? We're talking about the virtue that a person should have, not miracles, extraneous phenomena. Where do you see the first expression of the virtue of Gamzu L'Tova here? There are different situations. One situation where the thing already happened. It's too late, you can't do anything about it. So there's a question of your attitude. You don't have to assume necessarily that it's bad. This is something else. This is in a situation where something happened which would appear to be a tremendous setback, but you're still called upon to do something. Now it depends on how you react to it. That's another situation in life. You're facing a danger over here. This was a situation of extreme danger because they said these people have come to mock you, so he's going to kill them. So now you're in a tremendous calamity, and what would be the reaction of most people? Most people would say, that's it, we're finished. Because they look at the situation, and according to the way you look at the situation, it's over. There's nothing more you can do. Here too, Gamzu L'Tova says, how do you know? That a person should operate with a certain type of an attitude, and that is that no matter how bad the situation is, you shouldn't be thrown by the situation. Very often in life, a person experiences calamity. It's sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy, as we discussed. When a person is absolutely convinced that a situation can't be changed, then they're finished. At that point in time, they're finished. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. They're not going to bother. They won't make the effort. They'll make it half-heartedly. And an attitude, and everybody has that. Or sometimes it happens to somebody else. Like a president can be rocked with a tremendous scandal. And everybody says he's finished. He's completely finished. We had that in this country a couple of years ago, Clinton. And that's the way it looks. Because it was probably the most humiliating situation and all the evidence against them and all the other things with the lying in court and all of that. Now, in point of fact, on a certain level, he survived. Obviously, he was hurt. I mean, there are certain things that he can't be undone. Well, who knows in terms of his legacy? But most people thought he'd be finished. But he wasn't. Now, the average individual, I'll give him credit as far as this is concerned, the average person at that point in time is finished. And he would fold up and leave. He couldn't fight here anymore. You did see that happening in a different case with former President Nixon. Totally different personality. It's interesting to make a study of these two. Now, I'm not saying that this is a result of perfection over here. In one, that he, because he had the philosophy of Gamze Lutzer, I'm not saying that. Sometimes it's a person's nature. A person has certain emotions. So he acted differently. But if you look back in history, the personality of Nixon was completely, he contributed to his own demise. Got worse and worse and worse. Could not work himself out of the situation. A lot has to do with a different personality. Personality does not crush by it. And it's true, he recognizes the problem, the dangers, and he may even believe that there's... But if he's not crushed by it, he continues, let me see what I have to do now. And continues to relate to the situation. It's always a possibility. You know, it's not that simple. The realities are not that simple. Chazal say that even if the sharp sword is on the neck of a person, he shouldn't give up hope. Of course, it means in terms of praying to God. That's one element, which we maintain that's a factor. A person should never give up hope. But it also has truth in terms of the practical situation. Because in Judaism, you're always expected to do whatever you could do. You're not permitted to just sit back and pray. As long as there's something you could do. That's a principle. It's a fundamental principle. So that part, religious people don't like. Religious people sometimes get into this mode, we can just say to him, that's it. We can't do anything. Nothing we can do but God. That's the temptation. Because you're so convinced there's nothing you can do, you don't even want to touch the situation. You don't even want to look at the situation. You don't want to hear. A lot of times we've all had that emotion, I don't even want to hear. But someone has to hear. A doctor in an emergency room hears, and he sees the same phenomena. And very often he's able to find a way to save the patient. Well, you thought it's absolutely impossible. So what are these miracles? It's a miracle. This person was brought into the hospital, shot up, there was no way, and the doctor said it's a miracle. Well, maybe it is a miracle, but maybe this is the miracle. That you came to that conclusion prematurely. You came to a premature conclusion because you were convinced that that's it. But that's maybe a defect in you. And had you the ability to look at the situation from every different aspect, you would have seen that there was a way in which it could have been saved. But you didn't do it. The doctor is a trained professional. He doesn't get thrown. He's got a different perspective. He looks at the situation. He found it. That's the philosophy that he's trying to get across. That's why when they realize that this is a very dangerous situation, and in these situations you're facing enemies, and anything can go wrong, anything can happen. A certain kind of person, take a certain kind of person, with a certain kind of strength that doesn't fold. There are people, different kind of people, there are people that can be very effective in certain situations. And as long as it's going a certain way, they're very good, and they get confident. But when things seem to go against them and a crisis develops, then they suddenly freeze. They may freeze. They withdraw. They run away. And it's not that the situation is salvageable. It has to do with them. Their conviction that that's it, there's no way out of this thing, it contributes to the very result that they feared would come about. This is something in all aspects of life. Parents with kids, they're convinced that he's finished, he's a failure, there's no way. People in their own, in business, things don't always go smoothly, and you can get yourself into a very tough situation. And successful people, I mean, they control that emotion. They control the emotion and deal with it, stick with it, ride the storm, work it through, slowly, surely. All of a sudden they come back and sometimes get even bigger. You'll see this day with many businessmen. Some go bankrupt. There are certain people that are very successful. But they can only go in one direction, forward. And things are going forward, and they're terrific. There are athletes like that. You'll see this in every aspect of life. There are certain athletes that are very good, but again, as long as things are going their way. There's another kind that no matter how bad the situation is, he never gives up. He fights to the last play. You'll see that. Like, sometimes the team will come back. They're losing by a tremendous margin in the fourth quarter. You see this from time to time. And people are walking out of the stands. It's a foregone conclusion. Except, and you think, why even bother? Why is that quarterback even bothering anymore? He's still in there. He's still playing. And he continues. And the other side's getting overconfident, discovers a weakness, keeps going, plotting, and comes back. Was it a miracle? Yeah, it's a miracle. Everyone's going to call it a miracle. Maybe it wasn't a miracle in that way. Maybe there's the reality of the situation. He was not affected by this emotion. He dealt with the reality of the situation, saw it through to the very end. Literally, it's not over till it's over, to use a common expression. Miracle over here doesn't necessarily mean a change, a break in nature, like the splitting of the Red Sea. As Rabbi Chaim mentioned, we say in Modim, V'al Nisecha Shebechol Yom Yimanu, that God's miracles that are with us every day. What do we mean? Hidden phenomena. Providential phenomena. So it means that he was the kind of a person, when it says Malumad Benisim, that he was learned, he was practiced. It's in the sense of like Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit. Like the Rambam says, that the Ruach HaKodesh is the lowest level of prophecy, of Nevuah. But it's not actual prophecy in the sense of actual communication from God. It means that the person has an extraordinary grasp, a deeper grasp into the reality, and is able to see things about the reality that the ordinary person can't see. So that, you can understand why that's needed. Because most people are limited in how they look at the situation. That's it. We were caught with the dirt. Looks bad. Well, what are you going to do? But if you could have the ability to get beyond the immediate and look at it from every possible angle, it's what the Nevuah is sort of like, being able to see the phenomena behind what's apparent to everybody. So some people can see into a thing in a much deeper way. You've seen that on different levels, and different. You go for advice in a business or some other thing, and this person, I never saw these things before. And a lot of times a person can look into your own situation and show you things that you aren't even aware of. So that shows you from that what you're seeing is very limited. That's basically what it means. That's why he was chosen. A, because he didn't get rattled. He didn't get rattled. He never had that fatalistic attitude that it's over. But B, beyond that, he was able to take a look at any situation and to see that there's always the possibility within a situation that I could turn it around, it could work into something else. There are so many factors that determine outcomes that in any situation, even though it's set up in a certain way, there's always room for a maneuver, for some kind of maneuver, for some kind of strategy. But people don't go into that because they're very limited. Maybe they're limited emotionally. It's a Musar HaScale. It's very significant. Looking back in your own life to review. And when we have the negatives or the failures, the things we don't like in our life, so you always, there was nothing that could have been done. That's sort of like to give comfort to yourself. That's a fatalistic attitude. And most religious people that have this attitude of Gamzul Tova also have this fatalistic attitude that was Bashert. Those two things go together, even though they would seem that they contradict each other. So when they think about the negative things, they don't want to accept this. They don't want to accept this philosophy. This philosophy is that a person sticks with the situation, does the best that he could possibly do with the situation. And by and large, it's Tova. But in the past, when you failed, you don't want to face that. So then you want to resort to this, there's nothing that can be done. Well, once you can say there's nothing that can be done, you've left yourself off. You're off the hook now. That's it. You're excused. It's not your fault. Not my fault. What can I do? What could I have done? What could have been done in that situation? There's so many things in your life you can go through. And if you did it honestly with someone else, there was plenty that you could have done. Yeah, but then, of course, then you would have had to face a certain emotion. Or then it would have meant doing something unpleasant, perhaps, like apologizing. Or admitting you were wrong. And so on and so forth down the line. All right, what's next? What is this Eliyahu thing? The next step, as far as Eliyahu is concerned, it's not to be taken literally. The way Rabbi Chaid explained it, the Chazal referred to Gilui Eliyahu. It's like a Gilui, like a revelation. So that's what it means, that this was the inspiration that he had. It doesn't mean literally that he came. It's depicting it. The inspiration that he had is Eliyahu. Eliyahu reflects an inspiration in the sense of like something, that the deeper idea, the deeper insight. Now what's the deeper insight that he had? The challenge was to be able to take this calamity and to work it out in such a way that it could be a salvation. So the idea of Eliyahu is an illustration. It's illustrating as though in fact he came and he was a senator, and which means in a general sense, what did he do? You have to put yourself in the context now. There's no question at that time that the Romans were aware of the Jewish people. That the Jewish people had a certain history. Obviously, they knew all these things. Otherwise, it wouldn't make any sense. But that's true. They were familiar with the Jews. But, they had ruled the Jewish nation for a long time, so they knew the Jews had a Bible and the history and the Abraham. They knew all of that. And it does indicate a tremendous respect for the Jews, because they knew the Jews were a significant people. At this point in time, they had conquered them, but they were a significant people. He also had something else going for him, basing himself on that respect, that he made up this story. He made up a story that, to the contrary, you don't understand. We didn't bring you dirt to mock you. This is something which has tremendous significance, and it goes back in our history to our forefather Abraham, who, with 318 men, was able to defeat a mighty military force. Now you're talking, they're interested in that. That's what they're about. It's about conquest. And we have it from our sacred books. It was transmitted to us that this earth was very, very significant in bringing it about. That's why we didn't come here to mock you. Bear in mind two things that are very significant. If you analyze this from a psychological, if it's crazy, who's going to believe a story like that? Ah, that's precisely the very notion, the very preposterousness, that these people would come here with the intent of honoring, of gaining favor with a delegation, and bring dirt to mock is absurd. So that gives it a certain credibility. See how we turned it around? We realize the situation that we're in. We do have why would anybody think? But he didn't say that to them, because he couldn't say that to them. Well, you're mocking me. What he had to do was base himself on that, like in the back of your mind, like it sounds crazy. Why would these people come here and do something which would be so ridiculous and so self-defeating? They're not that kind of people. These are great scholars. So there must be something to this. There must be something to this dirt. It can't be what it seems to be. He understood that there was a possibility, there was a reality over there. And that there was a likelihood that they would listen to this. He found that. That was it was divine insight, so to speak, Ruach HaKodesh. But he also based himself on something else. Because if you were listening to this, and so it's like, so you're trying to sell me the Brooklyn Bridge, the whole thing is ridiculous. Was it really ridiculous? He also had a tremendous insight into the mentality of the Romans, that they were very prone to this kind of thinking. This magical thinking, omens, superstitions, special powers, and given that that's the case, that they respected the Jews, and the Jews said that this has a special significance, so they were prone, and they were involved. That was their whole thing, was to be conquerors and military. And if you understand, this may sound strange, but it shouldn't sound strange. In today's world, this type of people today are no different. I mean, I'm talking even about Jews and Orthodox Jews. You get any kind of an amulet, you bring back from Israel the latest amulet, you give it to people and you tell them this cured, everybody has to have it. Look at the tumult that was called by the story of the talking fish. Madonna just gave $5 million to build a Kabbalah center, or $6 million. A Kabbalah center in London. So she became a big devotee, and part of that thing is this Kabbalah water, special water. They tested it, means in the same vein. That is to say that the psychological attitude is very significant. Well, that's the same idea of Gamzul Tov that we've been talking about all along. So apparently the Romans, this kind of thinking, person feels he's jinxed. You give a baseball, you see how superstitious baseball players are? Special bat and this, so they make the same, they go through the same rituals before they go. You give them a bat and you tell them that this bat is the one that this person who could never hit a home run got up and he hit the 50 straight home runs. You give it to a hitter and it's going to have a different effect, the psychological effect. He's not jinxed anymore. To the contrary, they also believe that they're jinxed. If something, you know, something which they believe is negative is a jinx. So they thought they were jinxed. And he gave them this dirt, and this gave them a completely different attitude. And they went ahead, and they were successful. So they bought his story that this indeed, to the contrary, was the greatest possible thing they could do for them. They received treasure, they received honors. That's what it means, because it means that in the situation itself, you need two things. You need two things. You need, first of all, a certain type of a disposition, that you're not crushed, you're not shattered. But that in and of itself is not going to do it, because you can't just make up any kind of a crazy story. Then you need a tremendous insight. You got to get the best chachamim, you got to get the best wisdom, to be able to review it from every possible angle and see how this can be turned around. There's, generally speaking, there's always some kind of an angle. And if you look at it, but the person is resistant, is reluctant to do it that way, because as far as he can see, it looks bad. I mean, nobody wants to be in a situation like this. But the second part is the tremendous wisdom. Without the tremendous wisdom, it doesn't work. But you see the analysis that goes into it. Because you'd say, it's crazy. How are you going to tell him that this is an honor to give you this dirt? Well, he drew from the fact that they would think it would be absolutely preposterous. That gives him leverage. And he utilized precedent. He utilized Avram. That's why, because you'll ask, why did he have to mention Avram? No, because that shows that the very fact that the Gemara records that shows that he used a tremendous wisdom, a tremendous chachma to be used. It's not enough to just say Gamzul Tova. That's a completely different approach to Gamzul Tova. It doesn't mean that if you just take a different attitude, if now you're happy, everything's for the good, then it's going to work out good. No. It's a very concrete type of an approach. Now we can understand the next part of the story. Right? She had explained that it shows you that it had to do with the particular wisdom that was utilized. These people were extremely greedy, and these people looked at things from a superstitious vantage point. It also confirms, by the way, that mentality, the superstitious mentality, was something very significant, because these people obviously bought into it. They thought that they could do it. They didn't think it was crazy. So that shows the latter part of the story, when they go back to the inn and they tell them what happened, and they bring all their dirt. The fact that they do that shows that this was prevalent, that mode of thinking was prevalent. But they fail. They tested it, and they failed. Why? What does it mean they tested it and they failed? It means to say that they didn't accept the story from them. Because sometimes a person comes in at the wrong time, like copycats. After they heard, now you're suspicious. You see, the situation is not the same. When the Jews came, the Nachum understood that his story would be received in a certain way, that they'd listen to the story, because he had a certain advantage that it would be preposterous. When they came, it was no longer the same. They didn't have that same situation. It was after it was already done, and there was a question, maybe these people are opportunists. They're just trying to take advantage. So they didn't have the same factors going for them. And therefore, when it says they tested it, it didn't create that same sense of confidence. And they recognized that they They were doing it purely for their own benefit. They were phonies. They were trying to capitalize on something, which goes to show you that they partook of the superstitious, magical mentality, but the wisdom was lacking. That confirms that the success of Nachum Ish Gamzu was not just because of some magical thing, because he understood and he used tremendous chachma. It turns out the real philosophy of Gamzu Latova is exactly the opposite of what most people believe. Most people believe it's just a comforting thought, and magically speaking, everything will work out for the benefit, for the good, but it's not one which motivates a person, which is based upon how a person relates to a situation. Here, it's completely different. It's based upon the fundamental hashkafa, the philosophy of Judaism, that a person has to utilize his own free will. That you can't just sit back and expect miracles. The real perfection of an individual is to the greatest extent possible to use his own wisdom, to perfect his own emotions, and that's the real bitachon. That Nachum Ish Gamzu had a real bitachon in God, that this is the God set up a system to work in a certain way. And that if a person uses his intelligence and doesn't get thrown because he has bitachon, he has a certain confidence in God, that's the whole reality, the framework of the reality, that is the way to go. It's based upon the appropriate relationship to God. And a person is convinced that everything is the way it is. It's a result of God's creation. And the world operates in a certain way. And the way I look at it is very, very limited. And my ability to affect the situation, if I analyze it properly, is always there. And in addition, there's always the phenomenon of the divine providence. That also is an unseen. So if I act in accordance, if I act rationally in accordance with the divine providence, that's my security. That's what, the way I have to act. The question is being raised. It seems a little disturbing that they were giving a false impression of Judaism. That is to say, we don't really believe this. We don't believe it's true. Well, the whole story was patently false. It wasn't that kind of, they lied. It wasn't the dirt that came from that place, and it was completely false. That's not the meaning of the pasuk in Yeshaya. It was completely false that this dirt had any power to it. Yet they were lying, and also creating an impression, strengthening, reinforcing their superstitious notions. The answer is that there's nothing wrong with that. There's no problem. Insofar as lying is concerned, as we've learned, that there are situations when you're obligated to lie. One of them would be clearly to save a life. In order to save your life, you have to tell a lie, then you lie. No question about that. That part of it is easy. The other part, as far as the giving people a false impression, taking advantage of people's superstitious beliefs, in a situation where someone is going to kill you, if you're in a concentration camp and there's a Nazi, and you are able to convince them, because they have these superstitions, that you have a certain bracelet or you have a certain charm which is responsible for saving people's lives, and you can convince them of that. And you could save your life by doing that, or anything else. Of course you do that. Given that he's a wicked person, and he's out to destroy you, why am I concerned about his soul? He's not entitled. He has no rights. He's not entitled to anything. If I could, I'd shoot him. So if I can't shoot him and I have the ability to, that would be the greatest exercise of intelligence, if you can convince him of a certain charm. So what? This person's a corrupt person. Now, all things being equal, the person is not harming you, and they're superstitious, and you don't go out of your way to harm that person. That person is entitled. If you deal with him, you try and set an example of true Judaism, that we don't believe in superstitions. So in this situation, they had every right to do whatever they had to do to save themselves. But I would say something else, that if you think about it, in the long run, it's not even harmful to them. Not harmful to them at all. Because as things stand, they're not prepared to look up to the Jews at all. The Jews have to go there trembling and buy them off. So they're not interested in studying the Torah. They don't have that attitude towards the Jews. As a result of this, which you had every right to do, they now have a certain awe of the Jews, and if anything, it might get them to come closer, now that they have that respect, and then you could teach them a little bit about Judaism, and then after the fact, they'll realize that there is no such thing as superstition. Obviously, one would not be permitted to go out and do this as a method of drawing people close. That's not what we're permitted to do. Because then we're going to just get totally caught up in the magical. So they didn't go to Rome to do this, and they didn't make up this story in order to use it as a method of kiruv, or getting people closer. The situation arises where they had no choice, where they were threatened with destruction. In which case, it was the great intelligence to utilize this weakness that they had. They were corrupt. Now, I'm only showing you that after the fact, it may also have the consequence for some people that it might provide a benefit, that some people will have an awe of the Jews and come to learn more about the Jews.